Welcome to my journeys and stories around the old county of Gwent. And turning to the south, we're off to the seaside. Well, all Gwent's southern border is seaside, but it's not so much golden sands and ice creams. No, there are 22 miles of seawall and beyond the estuary that is the Severn Sea. And to reach this coast, you first have to cross the Gwent Levels, which stretch more or less from the outskirts of Chepstow to the edges of Cardiff. And for much of history, this has been a coming and going landscape, a fenland, a salt marsh, flooding, forming archipelagos, land bridges, a place where land and water have been in a long, complicated dance of advance and retreat, turning and turning again. It was the Romans who set about keeping the sea out to increase the grazing for their horses and cattle. Building a sea wall where before there were only intermittent ditches. And the medieval monks at Goldcliff extended and repaired and drained, and generations of coastal farmers dug ditches and reens so that the coming and going land became staying land and the land we see today. Now, coastal land is still subject to change, of course, and the Gwent Levels are no exception. A few years ago, I took part in a project created by Alison Neighbour, who's a multidisciplinary artist, and the project was called the Future Wales Coast Path. And the project explored the impermanence of coastal land, including the sections we take for granted, and contributed to an ongoing conversation about flooding and sea level rise and how we might adapt. And one of the things that Alison did in this project was to install a temporary lighthouse at the lowest point on the Gwent Levels, which is a mile or so inland, but which corresponds to where the coast might be according to current tidal models predicting sea level rise. Now, the lowest part of the Gwent Levels is at Mager Marsh, which today is one of the last of the old patches of fenland. And it is under the care of Gwent Wildlife Trust, who have a small education centre there. And it's just across the railway line from the little village of Mager itself. And it comes as no surprise now that Rambler passed through the marsh on her way to the sea. Wet foot, dry foot, she has come picking her way through the damp patchwork of meadows and woodland and pools and reens. And I came looking to follow her, as ever, in the damp early morning of what would surely be a hot June day. And I made my way along the walkways and across the little bridges over the reens to the bird hide to see who was up and about at the pond. There were half a dozen or so little egrets, as bright white as snow, sitting in the grey-green willow trees, looking impossibly exotic somehow. And a swan, with five largish but still fluffy grey cygnets, sculling past, then disappearing off amongst the reeds, to get on with the rest of their morning activities. I watched the water of the pond for a while from the hide, and then I made my way back under the trees and out into the meadow, and I found myself walking along paths bordered by meadowsweet, which was just setting out on its summer riot, but hadn't quite got into full swing yet. And I remember, Somewhere around my 14th birthday, I was given an opaque white jar of a perfume called Meadowsweet. It was all the rage at the time. It was meant to mimic the scent of new mown hay, and I don't think it really did, and I don't think it actually mimicked the scent of Meadowsweet either, although at that time I hadn't smelt the real thing, so I didn't know. But it was a special scent for me, and I used it for special, sacred things. In time, Meadowsweet perfume in opaque white glass jars fell out of fashion. But I remember. I knew Rambler would be looking out for the Meadowsweet, and these things had been going through my mind when, just by chance, I heard Laura Wainwright, a poet who lives nearby, speaking the words of her own Meadowsweet poem, which was inspired by events not when she was 14, but when she was 40 years old. But these words spoke to me, and I asked her if she would come and tell the poem here on the marsh. And she did.
Yeah, my name's Laura Wainwright, and I'm a writer, poet, an occasional artist, a musician as well. My childhood was spent looking out over the Gwent Levels towards the Severn Estuary, so it's a very close to my soul, this landscape. It's really integral, I think, actually, to my work. Well, I've always been drawn to Meadowsweet. It's just such a beautiful flower with just such a mysterious scent, and obviously thrives in this environment. The poem itself, it actually comes from a present that my sister Rebecca got for me, which was an experience at a gin distillery where you could infuse your gin with botanicals and spices and things. And I was drawn to the Meadowsweet because I loved the flower and found it mysterious, with a mysterious folklore behind it. And I made Meadowsweet gin, and it became the poem. So I'll read the poem. It has a little epigraph first, as by way of kind of background. Meadowsweet gin. Over the centuries, there were reports that children with bunches of meadowsweet in their rooms were found insensible in the morning, and it was thought dangerous to fall asleep in a field of meadowsweet. Like damp hay, the distiller warned, handing me a jar that could have contained sweepings from a barn floor. And yes, why, I wondered on my birthday, choose meadwort, hayriff, clairvoyant queen of the reen, ditch and sodden meadow, llei llaw gyfers, maligned bride, to what they say is the saddest drink, the most ruinous, when there were vials of dried lilac, lotus, passion flower, pink hibiscus and honeysuckle, wild violet, clover and rose. I unscrewed the lid and breathed the laced field's queasy analgesia. Spiked, I climbed like a child the sweetness of the stack. Although I had arrived footsore after 40 years of journeying, I knew this was no place to lie down and rest.
Oh, thank you. I love that you put the reference in there to Blodeuwedd Llei Llaw Gyffes and the twining of Meadowsweet in the making of her, in the essence of who she was. And isn't it strange? So much plant lore calls us, I think, for reasons we're not really sure of, and weaves its way into our own lore as well. Thank you. It's such a lovely poem. And we carried on, walking through the marsh, musing about plant lore. One of the Welsh names of meadow sweet is Brenhines y Weirglodd, Queen of the Meadow, meaning a hay or a water meadow. And I love how in Laura's poem she's transformed this into Queen of the Reens, marking its belonging here in this place. Before she left, Laura did give me another poem, but that one belongs a little further along the coast, so we'll keep it for then. And I went and sat for a while beside the Brinker, a willow sculpture made by Sarah Hatton and Melanie Bastian. Brinkers were the farm workers on the levels in previous centuries who were charged with keeping the reens and ditches clear on their land. This one is inspired by Annie Williams, who worked land on the levels in the 1700s. And she wears a wide-brimmed hat, which always reminds me of a halo. She's one of the watchful guardians of this place, I think. In the reen nearby, frogbit grows, and its heart-shaped leaves are like beautiful tiny lily pads, and its flowers are white as water lilies. It's a beautiful sight, and I hadn't seen it so much in flower before. If you sit quietly and look into the water below the frogbit, below the crazy pond skaters and the diving beetles, you can catch glimpses of what lies beneath. You may even get a glimpse of the world below, the world beyond, the other world, as people saw it long ago, reached through the gateway of water, a place where lives unfurl differently. Rambler knows this world too. And for a moment, I thought I just saw her face reflected there in the water. But it was only the morning sun glinting and dazzling me for a moment. Anyway, by now, Rambler is surely balancing her way on along the seawall, with the waves of the estuary on her left hand and the flatlands of the levels on her right. But there was one more place that I wanted to go before I went to join her. So I left the marsh and made my way back across the railway line, through the little village of Maygo and Undy, which nestles alongside it. Undy was traditionally a place for dancing at midsummer, including dancing with the fairy folk. And there's still a modern dancing hill road today, as a reminder of wilder times past. And there is now a hub, the Maygo and Undy Hub, a new community building, and it opens out into an old orchard. The orchard is a special place, and it's been restored and replanted with local varieties of apple, with help from the Living Levels Orchard Restoration Project, amongst others, and the orchard is cared for by volunteers. It's only small, part of the size it would once have been, but all old orchards are special places. And I usually visit here in the winter time for a wassail and a cidery blessing of the trees and a naming and a thanking them. So it's nice to visit and be here when the branches are leafy and green and the fruits already forming, instead of my usual winter visit when the branches are bare. And sitting under the trees, it occurs to me that orchards like these are sheltered accommodation for so many of the insects and birds that are busy. And whereas in winter when I come, the trees are deep in a dream and resting, today, at midsummer, they are buzzing and humming and chattering, and the whole orchard has got its arms open, and it feels like it's drinking deep. And we're still here on the levels, so the rising and falling waters aren't far away. And this orchard is not quite wild and not quite tame, and it too is a liminal place, I think a gateway place. And here are Pig Aderyn, St. Cecilia, Morgan Sweet and Monmouth Green, Tuaina Sheriff and Cadwaladr, and many more that may be seen. And sat in their company at midsummer, I feel heady with the poetry of the day. And although I haven't done this in any previous episodes of the podcast, what is filling my mind is a beautiful song by the fairy tale cellist Ailsa Meyer, who I've worked with before here on the levels. And so before I bring this episode to a close, here is Ailsa's apple tree song, which seems to me to sum up a lot of what's been happening on this particular journey today.
As I walked under the apple tree, a rosy fruit fell down. As I walked under the apple tree, it knocked off my gold crown. Oh, if you could see me now, without
hey.
Thank you for keeping me company on my journeys. And I'll see you again on down the track.